My next guest is a champion for women's health. She doesn't believe that life has to stop after a certain age. In fact, she has dedicated her life to helping women in midlife regain control by using the science behind nutrition. To her, there's no such thing as time taking its toll on the body, as she believes that we all have the power to be strong, healthy, and vital at any age. Coming up next on the 40 Plus Files, certified nutrition coach and advocate for healthy bodies over 50, Dee Davis. Welcome to the show, Dee. How are you?
I am wonderful.
Well, you look good. You look good.
Thank you.
For those of you who are listening, Dee is 60, and you know, you would never know it. We're going to get into all of that because, you know, she obviously has a secret to looking this good at 60. So we want to hear all about that. But I'm going to start out asking you a couple of questions that I ask all of my guests. The first one is, how did you view aging or growing older when you were in your 20s?
Oh, that is a great question. And first off, I just want to say that I am so excited for us to have this conversation. And I think what you're doing with this podcast and the ladies that you've been interviewing is just fantastic. So I'm just real excited to be here. When I was in my 20s, thinking about getting older, it just wasn't something that I thought about. I looked at older people as a time in my life that I just wouldn't get there. I think at that time, just, you know, a year passing, you know, moving from being 16 to 17 and being going from 20 to 21 seemed like a long period of time. And so for me, thinking about getting older, it just wasn't in my thought process. I just wasn't there.
Yeah, that's common. That's a pretty common answer, although it may be quite different. I think it depends on a woman's upbringing. You know, if there are older women in a person's life and they're constantly talking about age or aging, then it may be something that, you know, starts to infiltrate someone's frame of thinking at that age. But yeah, yours is a common answer. All right. So let me ask you, what was the show is called The 40 Plus Files. What was your biggest epiphany after turning 40? Now, you have hit a couple of milestones since then. So did you have any epiphanies after any of your milestones?
You know, that's a good question, too, because when I think back, turning 40 is supposed to be this big thing in your life or this age that you get to. Same thing with 50 and 60. But when I turned 40, I was, you know, heavily engrossed in my career and wanting to be the woman that's climbing the corporate ladder. And I think when I think back on, you know, some life lessons, what sticks out to me is, you know, the decisions that you make in life really impact the quality of your life. You know, whether those decisions are good or bad, they're unsupported or supported, or they're inspired or clouded, because time really waits for no one. And I think I view a good quality of life as being able to move without pain and being in good health and being adventurous and having flexibility. And there was a time in my life, you know, younger, when I used to watch that show, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you used to look at these lifestyles and maybe you thought that that was what a quality of life was really about. But as you get older, you come to know that that really is not everyone's reality.
So, yeah, that's so. As far as epiphanies are concerned, you just thought that you wanted a quality of life. You didn't really think of anything beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's good. You know, because I think a lot of people focus on what's on the outside and they don't really think about what they want to embody from a personal perspective. They do look at what they want to achieve as far as material things. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, when I looked at my body, of course, I want to have a healthy body. And, you know, we all have these standards of what we feel like our body should be. But we get to, there's a threshold, you get to a threshold where you say, you know what, my body might be going in one direction, but I'm at that threshold and it's time for me to do something about it. And that kind of gets back to, you know, the decisions that you make really do impact the quality of your life, whether it's on the outside or the inside.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your upbringing because you're as a Black woman, you grew up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. How was that?
You know, whenever people find out that I am from Iowa, they're like, oh my God, there's Black people in Iowa. Yes, there is. Yes, I am a Midwesterner and grew up in a number of cities in Iowa, actually. And by the time we got to Cedar Rapids, I was in high school at that time. My mom had just finished law school and she had, you know, set up practice there. So that's where we were actually living there in Cedar Rapids. And so, you know, the high school that I was at, mm-hmm. you know, very few Blacks in attendance. And so it was just one of those experiences where you're just immersed in a culture that's doesn't look like you.
Mm-hmm. Now, you did have there were a few other Black students at your high school. So did you form an alliance there with them?
Yes, we and I'm glad you mentioned this because one of the saving graces for me when I was in high school was being part of a fashion group called Mahogany Fashion Flames. And it just so happened that this group was actually led by my aunt, who was, I don't know, she's 5-6 years older than me, mm-hmm. but she had moved to Cedar Rapids and saw developing this troupe as a way to give us a little self-esteem. And so that's what it did for those of us who were involved. It helped boost our self-esteem and we would make our own clothes and then we would model those clothes. And we'd do shows all over Iowa. we even did shows in Wisconsin and Minneapolis, Minnesota. So it was really a great learning experience and made some friendships there. And it was just there at the right time, especially in high school. You want to make sure that your kids are active doing something positive.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's wonderful that you were able to find that and, you know, have some common ground with.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure you formed other friendships, you know, with students who were not Black. I mean, that's.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. I went to a pretty diverse high school too. Morgan Park at the time was very diverse. So definitely understandable. So talk about your educational goals then after high school. You know, you went to community college for a year and then worked with your mom at her law practice. What was that time for you like? And what were you thinking about career-wise?
Well, you know, I went to community college for a year. And, you know, at that time in high school, I mean, today, typically there's a conversation about, you know, what your goals are, educational goals for going to college. I didn't have that conversation in high school, mm-hmm. But I knew I needed to go to some type of college. So I went to the community college and it just wasn't the right timing for me. I spent most of my time partying in community college,
yes.
Hanging out with my friends who most of them weren't actually not in school. You know, they had graduated and, you know, working and doing whatever else. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I was working part-time for my mom at her law practice. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't exciting for me. And I was working for a low wage. Mind you, I was still living at home. So mm-hmm. you'll think about to put that into perspective. But me thinking about what I wanted to do with school, I realized that, you know, after a year that just wasn't what I was meant to do. And I really felt like I needed to move out from home and, you know, get my own job and be that adult person, you know, that I thought that I was supposed to be.
Hmm. Did you feel any pressure from your parents at the time? I mean, your mom is an attorney with her own law practice. I mean, were there any pressures?
You know, my mom, you know, just going back to what type of phenomenal woman she is, my mom and dad actually divorced when I was 3 years old. So she was raising, you know, three girls on her own. And I think just knowing her story of how she you know, they married when she was 16 years old, mm-hmm. but she ended up going back to school as an adult. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe me seeing her go back to school as an adult and getting her credentials as she was raising a family, I think that became maybe a normal for me. So as far as pressure from her, I think she saw both sides of it, okay. that you can have success even if you don't, you know, finish out this 4-year college. And for me, I never thought of myself as not being successful. So, you know, I was just on this course and this is what I wanted to do and I was going to be successful. You know, the mindset of us at that age. So,
yeah, absolutely. Now you say you felt like you had to, it was time for you to kind of move out and, you know, spread your own wings.
Yes.
What does that look like?
Yes. So I ended up moving to Des Moines, Iowa, and that is where, you know, I was had the opportunity to do exactly what you said there, to spread my wings. And I was fortunate enough to start working for an insurance company at that time. That was just happened to be the very first job that I'd gotten was for this insurance company. And it was a godsend, if you will, because I learned so much about insurance operations and different aspects of a company, because it was a small company and you get exposed to different departments. But I also had some really strong mentors there who, you know, they told me, one of them said, if you want to pursue this career in insurance, and I, you know, learned to become an underwriter, your credentials are going to be more important even than that college degree. Mm. And that turned out to be absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up getting all my credentials to be an underwriter and know about the insurance business. And then later on went on and got my bachelor's degree, you know, in management. So mm-hmm. I did, that was a personal goal of mine that I wanted to do. And so I was able to accomplish, you know, both the industry credentials as well as, you know, getting my degree, mm-hmm. finishing out.
Well, wonderful. Now we'll talk more about this in a bit, but you work with the insurance company and then you ended up moving to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and you worked for a prestigious insurance company there and you worked with doctors, right? What did you learn working with those doctors?
Yes. Phenomenal experience I had there. It was really my dream job to move here to and work with the insurance company. I'd moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana at that time. And the company I was working with, they were known as the experts in the insurance industry. And anyone who worked with this company was like, oh my gosh, you're working with this company. And so I had the pleasure of working with these doctors. And we worked on evaluating medical histories and doing research on why people live longer. And one I remember at kind of a defining moment at that company from one of the doctors, I had a case that I had taken into him. It was an older gentleman, and we were trying to determine how to rate his insurance application. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said, you know what, for this guy, really what I would like to do, I would just like to see him walk. If I can physically see him walk, mm-hmm. I'll know what type of lifespan he has. And so that, you know, said a lot about how we age and, you know, how mobile we are and our ability to perform normal activities of daily living, you know, whether it's cooking, walking, dressing, bathing ourselves, is important to how long we're going to live.
Hmm. Wow. And just, you know, the doctor saying that he could kind of tell how long this person would live based on the way he walked.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Wow. That speaks volumes. It really does. It speaks volumes. So, you know, I worked briefly in the insurance industry, you know, so I sold life insurance and things of that nature. So I understand the underwriting process, but how does a person's medical history shape their health and well-being, you know, in terms of patterns and behaviors, smoking history, disease, and all of that stuff, you know, to improve lifespan? Because I know that you focus on that as well.
Yeah. I mean, we know that you know, socioeconomic implications around healthcare, that, you know, people who have access to good healthcare have better outcomes. But when you manage your disease with intention, you also lengthen your lifespan. So, you know, as an underwriter and researcher, I got an opportunity to evaluate thousands of applications, and you get to look at a person's medical history over a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you're looking at 5, 10, 15, maybe 20 years of medical history, and you can see patterns that emerge, you know, whether someone was a smoker, or how often they would go to the doctor, whether they were actually following the doctor's advice. And, you know, you look at a disease like diabetes, for example, and you can look at the patterns, you can see the patterns in the reports on how controlled their blood sugars were over time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of those impairments that I don't think people realize how important it is to control your blood sugars, how controlling your blood sugars lengthens your lifespan and, you know, prevents you from getting other serious complications from, you know, from that disease. And you can see this in the, when you're looking at the reports, you can see that this person over here was more compliant, you know, they weren't smoking, they, you know, they weren't drinking, you know, excessively. Mm-hmm. You did a little exercise here and there, and you can see that they had just had better health outcomes compared to someone else whose medical file was, you know, 2-3 inches thick because they had so many issues and complications that were going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that smoking and drinking, it attributes to, you know, in addition to diet? Do all of those things factor in when it comes to overall health and lifespan, in your opinion?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Anytime you do something, you know, that's in excess, you know, like drinking alcohol, you know, that's going to impact your organs. And of course, smoking impacts your ability to recover even from simple impairments, and not to mention what it does to your lungs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know, we already know, most people know that if you smoke, you know, you're putting yourself at risk of lung disease, lung cancer. And we know that excessive alcohol leads to cirrhosis and, mm-hmm. and complicates the healing process. So they're very important, these types of habits. And, you know, when you are engaged in those, you know, sometimes we call them riskier behaviors, mm-hmm. even the foods that you eat, you're not going to digest the nutrients in a proper way, you know, that helps your body to mm-hmm. thrive.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, you're diagnosed with sarcoidosis in your early 30s. So can you explain what that is? Because I know, I think most of us have heard of sarcoidosis and probably known people with it, you know. I'm speaking for myself. What is it, and who's more likely to be diagnosed with it, and how does it progress?
Yes. When I was in my early 30s, and I was 31 years old, I was diagnosed with sarcoidosis, and it's an inflammatory condition that it can affect any organ of your body, but mostly affects the lungs and the skin, you know, for most people. And, you know, and most people know that Bernie Mac, for example, died from mm-hmm. complications with sarcoidosis. Mm-hmm. And so it's a progressive disorder, and it causes granulomas, which are these tiny lumps, to develop around your organs and, you know, lymph nodes. And for me, at the time that I was diagnosed with it, and even still today, they don't know what causes sarcoidosis. They told me that it could have been environmental, you know, something in the environment. There's, you know, potentially some hereditary aspects to it as well. Later on, I did learn that that I had a cousin who had sarcoidosis as well, but they just didn't know. They didn't know, you know, what caused it. I know growing up in Iowa and the places that we lived, you know, we were around a lot of corn. In fact, we lived next to a cornfield, you know, at one point. So I thought, well, maybe ingesting, you know, fumes from farming or, right. you know, whatever it might be. And then growing up, you know, we used to clean our house with Comet. Mm-hmm. If you're familiar with that. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you use Comet, those particles just fly all over the place. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, maybe I've ingested Comet. You know, I just, you right. know, I didn't know what it was. And the doctors, they didn't know what the cause of it was either. And there just was very little literature about it at that time. And of course, there's more known about it today, but it does primarily impact African-Americans, you know, especially, you know, more so than any of the other races.
Hmm. Okay. So, and I know that you were trying to discover some causes, you know, just personally, because, you know, just thinking about, because you're pretty fit, you know, at that age and watched what you eat and all of those things. So what your doctor recommended a steroid, but you wanted to do something different.
Yes. When I was diagnosed, and initially the reason why I even went in to see the doctor was because I had some, you know, little palpitations in my heart. And, you know, as an underwriter, whenever something happens, your body, you tend to self-diagnose yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, oh, I need to go see a cardiologist. Mm-hmm. So I scheduled an appointment with the cardiologist and they scheduled it out of the blue. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they ran an echo test and that was normal. But, you know, three doctors came into the waiting room and said, you know, start asking me if I could breathe. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what do you mean? And, you know, yes, I can breathe. And that's when I found out that I had lung problems and they wanted me to see, you know, this pulmonologist, and it was this sarcoidosis, and that I only had 70% capacity in my lung, which was pretty significant. And hence, you know, can you breathe? Can you really breathe? Are you having trouble breathing? So they wanted to put me on this heavy dose prednisone. And I knew what the implications were of being on this medication. They also told me that I would gain weight. Mm-hmm. And they told me that I would end up with a moon face. And I thought, you know what? That's not going to happen for me. Mm-hmm. They told me that most likely my body had grown accustomed to the sarcoidosis, because I was exercising three times a week mm-hmm. at that time. You know, I had a Y membership. Mm-hmm. I was doing aerobics. And they said that my body must have just, you know, adapted to that lesser lung capacity. Hmm. So, you know, I went ahead and I took the medication, but I also said, you know what, sarcoidosis is not going to define who I am. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be that girl with sarcoidosis. Hmm. And I'm not also going to be that girl that sits back and allows my body to gain weight and to, you know, that my facial features to be distorted because of this medication. Mm-hmm. So I changed the way I ate at that time. And, you know, thinking back today, did I know that changing the way that I ate was going to help me to get over sarcoidosis? I don't know that I necessarily knew that so much as I knew that if I changed the way that I ate, mm-hmm. it was going to help prevent me from gaining weight. So at that point, I was probably more vanity, you know, don't want to gain weight, don't want my face to be looking distorted. So I'm going to change the way I eat. And I started eating more whole foods and I went to the gym more often, you know, instead of laying back and saying, oh my God, I can't go to the gym because my lung capacity. No, I went to the gym more. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because that being on that steroid, when I did go back to the gym, I felt like Superwoman because I could breathe better.
Wow.
And so what they had said is my body had just gotten used to it. Yeah, that was absolutely true, because once I started taking that medication, I realized, yeah, you had some lung constriction there. Mm. But I was not going to be the girl with sarcoidosis. And in fact, I told my family mm-hmm. to stop calling me on the phone and asking me how I was doing every single day, because my mom and my dad were, you know, they were constantly wanting to know how I was doing.
Yeah.
And to me, that was helping to contribute to that whole D's the person with the sarcoidosis.
Mm, yeah, that's understandable, though, for parents to be concerned, you know, and then you are living away, you know, from home.
Absolutely.
So that's understandable. But it seems like you took your life in your hands and say, you know what, I was given this diagnosis, but I'm not going to let it define me.
Absolutely.
And that's amazing because I know people who have gone on, you know, prednisone and gained the weight and did develop, you know, all of those other side effects and had the moon face, but you decided that you were going to combat it just by upping your regular routine.
Yep.
And yeah. Changing your diet, exercising more, and you did not gain the weight and you did not experience those other side effects. That is amazing. That's kind of mind-blowing, actually. Wow. So you were still working in the insurance industry at this particular time when you had this diagnosis, correct?
Yes, yes.
All right. So you worked in the insurance industry for a while. How did you make the shift then from working 9 to 5 to becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. There's a couple things, actually. Number one is, you know, how you always have, or I can't generalize to everyone, but I'd always had this little inkling of, you know, having my own business and what would that business be? Mm-hmm. And there was a memo that was sent out to all the employees. It was a corporate initiative and they wanted everyone to treat their jobs as entrepreneurs. So they wanted us to be entrepreneurs for our job. And I thought, I can be an entrepreneur for myself. That's great that you want us to be entrepreneurs for, you know, for this company, mm-hmm. but I can do something on my own. And so at that time, my husband and I, we had looked at different businesses that we could do. And, you know, we had dabbled in legal services and telecommunication services and marketing nutritional supplements. And so it was during this time that we were at, you know, marketing the nutritional supplements that my company decided they were going to downsize. And, you know, they were eliminating over 100 jobs. And those of us who met the qualifications for early retirement, they offered us an early retirement package. And I said, you know what, this is a good time for me to take that faith, a leap, and instead of looking for another job, you know, let me continue to pursue what I become passionate about at this time is, you know, nutrition. So that's kind of how I made that jump into entrepreneurship.
Okay. Right. Now, so I know that, you know, and I had Dr. Sharon Malone on the show and Monica Molinar from Alloy Health. And, you know, they educate women about menopausal symptoms and things of that nature. Now, I know that you have a story. Some women don't experience perimenopausal symptoms, but you obviously did, right? Yeah. And you're working at the time, as so many of us, you know, are while we're going through that. So what happened? How did you know that something was going on? What were you starting to experience?
Well, you know, I looked up one day, and I think this is a common story, and I was 30 pounds overweight, like overnight. Mm. And, you know, like you said, I was working all those hours on the job, and I was experiencing night sweats. And at the time, I didn't know that the night sweats that I was experiencing had anything to do with menopause, because in my family, the women never talked about menopause, mm. you know? So I happened to be, you know, at my doctor's office, and I was sharing with her my symptoms and, you know, what's going on, and, you know, I'm gaining weight. And she looks at me and she just had this little chuckle, and she says, "You're just going through menopause." And I'm like, "What?" And she said, you know, and some women gain a little weight and some women gain a lot of weight. and emphasis was on a lot. And, and I'm sitting here going, no, that's not going to be me. Yeah. You know, I got to do something about this, you know. So that's how I really found out that I was going through menopause. And like I said, I knew that I had, you know, well, I woke up, you know, looked at pictures and whatnot, and I'm like, I'm 30 pounds overweight. Mm-hmm. And I was having the night sweats. And I didn't know enough about menopause really mm-hmm. to connect the dots that's really what I was going through until my doctor said, this is what's happening.
Mm. Okay. So at that point, you know, now you, I'm pretty sure you weren't fazed by that. Your doctor saying, oh, you're just going through menopause because having been given the diagnosis of sarcoidosis when you're in your 30s, you thought, I didn't let that get the best of me. So before you talk about menopause and how you started to, you know, fight against it, you know, what happened with the sarcoidosis?
Oh, yes. The sarcoidosis burned out. The doctors say, that's the term that they use, was it burned out, meaning that there was no active sarcoid going on in my body. And I attribute that to the fact that I did, you know, the nutrition, the additional exercise, the fact that I did follow the doctor's orders with, you know, taking the prednisone. You know, I don't believe that. Yeah, if your doctor says this is a course that you do need to take, they're telling you that for a reason. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think you should ignore what doctors, you know, advise. But at the same time, it's your life and you can take action to help manage your disease in a more effective way. So it burned out and I do still have some scarring in my lungs mm-hmm. As a result of it, but it's not a factor in my quality of life.
Mm. Burned out. Wow, that's amazing. So, you know, you beat it for all intents and purposes. Wow. So, okay. So now, you know, your doctor tells you that you're going through menopause and, you know, I know that you've probably felt like, I'm definitely going to get a handle on this. What did you start doing? Because you had night sweats, you gained 30 pounds. What was your course of action at that point?
Yeah. So, you know, when, you know, it's like she gave me a mandate that in my mind, I'm like, oh, no, that's not going to happen to me. So, yeah, you know, what I did, what most people do, most women, I went straight to Google. I started Googling, you know, menopause and losing weight and all these things that, you know, that you could do. And of course, I've got thousands of recommendations. what I could do.
Yes.
You know, and I would have some success losing weight, but it was kind of this yo-yo mm-hmm. of you have a little bit of success and then the weight comes back on. Mm-hmm. And at the time I mentioned that my husband and I were marketing nutritional supplements and I had found, you know, some relief with, you know, herbal teas. Mm-hmm. And so that was helping a little bit, but I wasn't seeing the results that I wanted to see, you know, in my body. And even some of our customers and clients, they were going through some of the same things, you know, with the yo-yo or the products might work. And then all of a sudden, you know, the weight comes back on. And so I felt like I needed a deeper understanding of nutrition and, you know, food, it really to understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't just, you know, you could work out more, but that didn't always result in what the results that I wanted to have. I didn't see the results there. Mm-hmm. So it was more than just increasing your exercise. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. You have to do something with your nutrition as well.
Yes. And I love the fact that, you know, you use the word nutrition. We'll talk about that because a lot of people, you know, focus on diet and exercise. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in dieting, you know, per se. I mm-hmm. believe in lifestyle changes. Mm-hmm. Because no, I'm not going to do this for 2 weeks. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I threw that out the window a long time ago. So you started to improve your nutrition. What did you find out about, you know, the food pyramid and things that, you know, we've been told? You know, you begin to study nutrition and, you know, found out a few things. Talk about that.
Yes, you mentioned the food pyramid. When I was going through my certifications and I learned about the food pyramid, I felt like I had been bamboozled. That's the term that I use. Bamboozled by the USDA, by, you know, our government regulators who, you know, make the rules and the guidelines, and they're supposed to have our best interest at heart. And I just felt like the guidelines that were created in a way that supported big business. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is I like to say that we live in the United States of processed America. And so much of our food is processed. And the food pyramid was designed around processed foods. That was the bulk of what we were eating, was these processed foods. And, you know, you look at today and the obesity epidemic, and, you know, the obesity rates are climbing. And you look at, you know, the foods that people mostly associate with the United States, and it's, you know, hamburgers and fries and chicken and, you know, fast food restaurants. And that's what our kids are eating. And, you know, we have even big numbers of children who are obese now. And it's a directly related to the foods that we're eating. So I felt like I had been bamboozled by, you know, the food pyramid.
What is it? Hoodwink, bamboozled, let her stray and run them up, you know.
Right.
Brother Malcolm.
Yes. And I just felt like, you know, you feel like you're in your 50s, you're in your 40s, you're in your 60s, you know, that you've lived long enough that you should know. You should know how to eat. You should know, you know, eating. You do that every day. You know, you pride yourself on, you know, cooking that macaroni and cheese and, you know, being the talk of how you made a particular dish. And so when you learn more about nutrition and you find out, wow, there's just so much that I really don't know.
You say that you don't believe that you actually learned how to eat until you were 55.
Yes.
I mean, I know you're talking about nutrition, but I had Chef Babette Davis on the show, you know, last season, and she happens to be a vegan chef, but she said she learned a lot about food combinations, you know, that are, that go against, you know, our body types and things of that nature. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. What I mean by I learned how to eat is really about, I learned about the different, you know, macronutrients. And I learned how to eat in a way that my body wants me to eat, whether it's, you know, being more mindful about how I'm eating and how to approach a plate, how to prepare for your meals in advance. I think, you know, we do a great job of preparing for Thanksgiving dinner and, you know, the holiday meals, but we don't do quite as well just on our regular day-to-day eating. And I learned when I listened to my body and I tried different foods, I learned the value of, you know, eating more vegetables. And I learned the value of paying attention to the type of grains that I was eating. And so when I say I learned how to eat, you know, that's kind of the context that I refer to, is I learned about nutrition, but I also learned how to approach food and how to experience food in a new light. And my taste buds naturally changed as a result of it. And so, you know, I like to share with people that when you experiment with more whole foods and the natural foods, when they're closest to their source, you naturally gravitate towards eating in that way. And so it's not it's not that you're giving up other foods. It's just that you develop a taste for the better foods. And so you're not really giving up anything. You're eating what you want to eat. And I think that's freeing for a lot of people.
Absolutely. And that's definitely important. So you are now a certified nutrition coach. So what does that entail exactly?
I help women to create their own personal blueprint. So they lose weight, they can balance their hormones, gain energy, and really transform their body naturally without dieting, as you mentioned, without dieting or, you know, resorting to the extreme workouts and end up, you know, hurting themselves and quitting, you know, altogether. And so it's really about paying attention to what you as an individual person, what your body needs. And it's about taking a holistic approach. So it's not just the nutrition and it's not just the exercise, but it also involves looking at your stress levels and sleep and your ability and willingness to make change, you know, in your life. So all of these things impact how much weight you're going to lose and how much of the nutrients your body's going to absorb and, you know, help you to become healthier and help you to actually be able to lose weight. So that's, you know, that's really what I focus on and how I can help people the best.
Now, I know that people who focus on fitness, you know, I think it is universally suggested that people move in, you know, some kind of way, you know, whether it's walking, you know, 3 to 4 times a week or whatever have you. But it sounds like when it comes to the overall nutritional aspect and even fitness, that it's not a one size fits all solution because everybody's, you know, body is different. Everybody's metabolism is different. Is that correct?
Yes, it is not a one size fit all. And that's where we tend to run into trouble with some of the popular diets and exercise programs that are out there. Because, you know, for the most part, especially if you look at some of the bigger names that are out there, those programs are designed to appeal to a wide range of people. Mm-hmm. And so there's no customization there. And what ends up happening is, you know, you go through these programs and at the end of the program, you don't know how to make it work for you as an individual. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, nutrition and fitness is all personal. It mm-hmm. is all personal. And it's important to have the nutrition nailed down. It's important that as menopausal women, mm-hmm. that you are doing resistance training and that mm-hmm. you are, you know, strengthening your muscles and your bones. Mm-hmm. And increasing your metabolism, you know, through your diet and through your exercise.
Yeah. So you teach women how to do this, you know, how to balance the right proteins and carbs and fats and things of that nature.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right.
And so now you also mentioned resistance training. You know, why is that so important for women over 40? I know I heard it, you know, and I started doing it. I'm like, okay, I don't know why, but
yeah. Yeah, it's very important. And when I was younger, most people that I talked to, they're real familiar with cardio, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. But less familiar with resistance training and using weights. And I think my perception of it when I was younger was that that was for the guys, that was for the men. And if I go out lifting weights, I'm going to look all bulky in. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have that feminine look that I wanted. And that's actually false mm-hmm. when it comes to mm-hmm. resistance training. So it's important that women over 40 engage in resistance training because it's going to help you to improve your muscle mm-hmm. mass. It's going to help you with your range of motion, you know, with your joints. Mm-hmm. It helps you to be more balanced. You have balance and flexibility and you're able to move better. And you mentioned increasing your metabolism. So these are all important reasons why you should be doing some type of resistance training, at least 2 to 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. You should be doing something. And, you know, we know that exercise alone is not going to result in your weight loss efforts. Nutrition alone is not going to result in your weight loss efforts. You need to do both mm-hmm. together. So your plan needs to include focused on good nutrition as well as focused on some type of resistance training. And you can do some cardio too. Mm-hmm. But the resistance training is very, very important. And I personally noticed a difference in my body and my ability to shed, you know, I had 30 pounds of weight to get rid of. When I added the resistance training and focused on my nutrition, that's when things changed for me.
Okay.
That's when it changed.
All right. So I'm the kind of person, you know, I say everything in moderation. So, and I just want to know, you know, because I'm like, okay, if I get enough of the good stuff in, you know, then every now and then I can treat myself to something. I mean, what do you think about that?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, I like to tell people that, look, I'm not giving up my Dutch apple pie. And
right.
I am not. If you put it in front of me, I'm going to eat it. So, so there, you know, there's no such thing really as bad foods. There's more nutritious options. Mm-hmm. So I like to coach along this. It's a spectrum of a continuum of eat more of these types of foods, eat fewer of these other types of foods. And then you've got your foods in the middle. Mm-hmm. And so to get there, to get to the point where, you know, you're eating, you know, more of the more nutritious things, it requires some experimentation and new learning and being open to experimenting with, you know, something that's more closest to the source, meaning it's not processed. It's closer to the way it looked when it was grown or birthed. And you can have these other foods that you like the ice cream and the pies and the macaroni and cheese and some of these other foods. They're not totally off limits. And, you know, one of the reasons, another reason why diets fail is because they have you focusing on eliminating whole foods or foods that you like. They, you know, have you eliminating those things. And I say, no, you can eat those things, but you learn how to eat those things.
Okay, and good.
Yes. You learn how to eat them so that you can enjoy them. I like to say, if you're going to eat that pie, eat it slow, savor it, and enjoy every piece of it.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure that I just make this up, you know, because I want to eat stuff every now and then. Okay. I feel better now. All right. So you believe that everyone should know that it's okay to be a student at any age.
Absolutely. Because, you know, I mentioned that the older we get, you know, we become wiser.
Yes.
But we also have to be open to exploring new ways of thinking about, especially as it around food, because we didn't grow up necessarily learning about nutrition. You know, we knew we had to eat. This, in my own personal experience, you know, my mom was, you know, raising three girls and going to school and, you know, working and trying to make sure we had food on the table. So whatever she put down on that table for us to eat, that's what we were going to eat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of those items may not have been the highest in nutrition, but they was what she could afford.
Right.
You know, for us. And so, you know, there's ways that we learned how to eat when we were growing up. You know, there's traditions that we have. And, you know, now when we find ourselves either with disease or we find ourselves overweight, mm-hmm. we have to think of new ways to either lose the weight or to get our health under control. Because, mm-hmm. again, it's not okay to grow up with preventable diseases when we know there are ways that are things that we can do to, you know, to prevent mm-hmm. high blood pressure and, you know, type 2 diabetes from happening to us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people do believe, well, it's just a part of growing older. It isn't.
It really isn't. No, no.
So, yeah, I'm glad that, you know, those myths are being dispelled, you know, more and more. So, you know, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, but you are 60 and look fabulous. I mean, just amazing. Let me ask you this, because I know that you're into nutrition and fitness. How far removed are you from what you thought you would be doing at 60 to what you're actually doing now?
Oh, I am removed, because, you know, when I started working in corporate America, that was for me, I was going to be the corporate girl. You know, I was going to climb that ladder, and I was working with all those experts, and I was going to become an expert at what I did. And I did become an expert at what I did. And so at 60, now that I'm, you know, retired through downsizing, you know, I thought I was going to still be working and, you know, maybe having a little business on the side. But so that's what I envisioned initially. And so I never thought that I would be coaching other women about nutrition and, you know, exercise. I never saw myself as going and getting certified as a fitness coach. Mm-hmm. I just didn't see that for myself. And here I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I read somewhere where it says that you don't have to go seeking out your passion because your passion will find you. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's kind of what has happened with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you answered my next question. That definitely sounds like it's your passion. And what I love about, you know, you and the work that you're doing is that you have a story, because some women, you know, tend to believe that women who look like you at your age, that, oh, you know, she's, you know, born like that. She never gained a pound, you know, from the time she was 15 years old, you know, all of those things. And you are here to say, no, I changed the course of my life. And so can you.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what are some of the biggest advantages of doing what you do at your age now? And what are some challenges?
Oh, so I think an advantage for me at my age right now is that, like you said, I do have a story that I can share. And because I am working for myself now, I do have some flexibility in choosing what I want to work on, who I want to be, and the type of people that I actually want to work with. Mm-hmm. So I think those are some advantages that I have. But I think about some of the challenges. It is, you know, some of the similar things is you have the flexibility to choose your own course, and, you know, the decisions you make, you know, impact what you are going to be doing and how well you can do those things. So having that flexibility is both an advantage and a disadvantage, you know, to some extent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, you know, I've been saying this my whole life, you know, that it's so much harder to lose weight when you get older. Like, to me, it seems like once you hit 30 and especially 40, like, man. So what advice do you have for women who are over 40, but believe that their best years are behind them, even when it comes to, you know, health and fitness?
Oh, your best years are not behind you. You can have a fit and vibrant lifestyle at any age. Age is just a number. And I truly, truly believe that if you're proactive and you look at nutrition, you look at exercise, you look at, you know, if you have a disease, you look at what can you do to mitigate it. You can have a vibrant lifestyle. You can grow up and not have pain. You can grow up and be mobile and have the flexibility. It's not too late at all, you know, to improve your health outcome. You know, you just have to make a decision and get started. And, you know, I think for some of us, you know, and I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, is, you know, we have to be willing to say what I've been doing is not working and reach out and get the help that we need. There's no embarrassment there. There's no shame there. It's just you being a smart woman and, you know, taking your health into your own hands and saying, you know, I'm going to do something about this. Personally for yourself, you know, personally for yourself, not to please anyone else or not to conform to what others might think. It's really your personal decision. And, you know, it's your life that you have left to live, and you have 40, 50 more years of it. Mm-hmm. So life is not over. Mm-hmm. You're just in the middle of it. So, you know, you can't shut down now. You got to keep moving.
I love that. That's definitely some sound advice, Dee. Wow. So how can people find you? You know, you are helping women and just, you know, helping them create just wonderful lives for themselves. How can people find you and get in touch with you?
Yes, you can go to my website. It's deatradavis.com. And you can also find me on Facebook. I like to post inspirational topics and have discussion on my personal profile. So that's davis.deatra on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And then I have a little gift for your listeners. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've found is women have some issues with cravings, with food cravings. Mm-hmm. And so I created a guide that will help you to crush your food cravings. That's the name of it. Mm-hmm. And you'll find that at deatradavis.com/wordyprofessor. Okay. And in that guide, I give you 9 strategies to help you to, you know, look at cravings in a different way and some tips that you can use to finally break through and, you know, feel good about what you're eating.
Oh, well, nice. I love that. So they are in for a treat, and all of that information will be in the show notes. Thank you, Dee, for sharing your 40 plus power with us today. I'm so grateful for you sharing your time today and helping my listeners. Thank you.
And I'm so excited and just pleased that you asked me to be a part of this wonderful podcast and work that you're doing. So thank you.
Dee continues to help women over 50 find the right nutritional combinations for their bodies. She uses the power of science nutrition to not only maintain her personal health goals, but to teach women everywhere how to do the same. To find out more about Dee, you can visit her website at www.deatradavis.com. Don't forget to claim your gift from Dee by clicking on the link in the episode show notes. That's www.deatradavis.com/wordyprofessor. For more information about the podcast, send inquiries to info@the40plusfiles.com. Don't forget to follow the podcast on Instagram @the40plusfiles. You can also follow my blog at www.wordyprofessor.com. Until next time, 40 plus phenoms, keep on shining.